Lizzo, are you in the Kaya Asylum?
I feel like I can't be in the Kaya Asylum. I have Grammys and world record music. I have number ones. I have a diamond record. I am a successful artist.
Lizzo.
Swiftologist.
Welcome to Protopop. I am so excited to have you here. Before we get any into the bigger picture career stuff, I know that you've been living with this record for a while. It just came out. How does it feel sitting here having it out in the world? How have you been metabolizing it?
Oh my gosh. I've been saying this a lot, that it feels like pushing out a baby, but talking to you, I think I can get a little even more technical. Like, it feels like a science experiment.
Yeah.
Like, for me, like, releasing pop and the kind of pop that I make in 2026 is like, what's gonna happen? It's like pouring like the peroxide or whatever inside the volcano and seeing if it erupts. And if it doesn't erupt, just make another volcano. So for me, I was very curious to see how it would land when it landed, because this album was supposed to come out last year, you know, and it could have came out the year before last year. But I also think with pop and with music, timing is everything. So right now I'm just like letting it live. Reminder, I've never been number one out the gate, girl. I'm a grower.
The slow burn.
I am a slow burn. About Damn Time took 14 weeks.
And it's the greatest song ever made, and we should have that conversation.
Hello. It's record of the year. It's number one girl. It was, honestly, it was song of the summer, but we're going to give it to Harry as it was. Harry can have it, but it's my song of the summer. Like, but it took 14 weeks, you know? So I also know that I need to step back and just like enjoy. Like, I had an epiphany. I woke up one morning and I was like, you know, like Leah Kateb on Love Island. I was like, and what? You know what? Never mind. I'm going to enjoy myself.
Good. Yeah, I'm going to let it rock. I mean, when your inspiration is like greater than your fear of letting something, I don't know, fail or flop, then you're in a powerful place, because I think the algorithm, as we've talked about, rewards more and more and more. Yeah. And when you're just generating more and you're in a creative space, why not just put it out?
I'm not afraid of failure anymore because I've already won. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that the general public may not believe or understand about me, and also the game. Because I think once they hold people to this standard, like, you just have to keep doing it like you did it, and then greater. And if you don't break the Beatles record, then you are not a real pop artist. And it's like, honey, it's okay. Like, I'm not going to break anybody's record. I might break my own record, because that's only person that I'm competing with. You know what I mean? And but that's my lane. That's my story. And I'm very, very good with it.
And you want to stay where you are doing the things that you love to do for your fans, the people that want to listen to you.
That's what it's all about. I feel like pop used to be about general public. Pop used to be about the masses and being this like ubiquitous like star that the world all knew.
The main pop girl.
Yes. And like it was all, like, you were the only one in the lane. And if another one came up, it was like the, it was like a versus, but there was no other pop star. Like, you were the one. And I think now it's just like, who's my fan base? Who's my community? Like, who am I talking to? I'm talking to the lesbians. I'm talking to the Lizzies. I'm talking to my people. And staying that way. And I always talk about Taylor she's been doing that for such a long time. And I just think that it was just like so genius, and it was so smart to have that foresight. I don't even know if she had the foresight to do that. I think she just built it organically. And now she has her own like community around her that back her up. And I just think that's what everyone needs to be doing.
It is, because it's really difficult to like measure who is being successful. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this series is because I really want to like discover and talk about artists whose careers don't fit in the traditional pop star trajectory that you've mentioned before. And the old model was like so simple. Like, you got signed, you get bigger every era, every album outperforms the last one, and you never let people see you struggle. But I think you're showing us right now, like in such an interesting way, that that's just not how modern pop works anymore.
At all. And I think I'm getting my beat up a little bit on the internet for it, but I'll take that risk. When I came into this game as a big girl in a leotard singing about how I love myself, I knew I was going to get scrutiny. I knew I was going to get backlash, but I was like, I'm just going to continue to be myself. And right now I signed up for this as well. Like, I'm just going to keep being honest about it, because in the long run, somebody will look back and be like, thank you. Yes. And I've gotten that a lot.
I think that you've had an impact that is more profound than you realize. Like, I think you know for sure. But as we talked about a little bit before, like the beauty of a pop song is that a message can travel so far. Mm-hmm. And you bake very specific messages into the songs that you make.
I do bake.
You be baking things.
I do that under I bake, honey. And it's intentional, whether, you know, it's so crazy. I made a vow a long time ago to only make positive music. And this is when I was working at Paisley Park a lot with Prince. And I remember, like, he wanted to do an album with me. And he's like, but it has to be positive. Like, we can't say anything negative. There can't be any, like, and I took that with me. Like, when, you know, he left the world, I was like, I made a vow. I said, I'm only going to make positive music, whether people think it's corny, whether people think it's fake, I don't care. And I've stayed in that commitment, and I've struggled at some points because there's times where I want to make cool music and I want to be like moody and I want to be a little, but I'm like, no, I promised that I would make this kind of music. And when I go out and I do my meet and greets, I just did a bunch of meet and greets for the people who come to my table and tell me how a song changed their life or got them out of an abusive marriage, mm-hmm. or helped them while their like family member is sick and dying, or helped. Somebody told me that one of my songs helped stop them from committing suicide.
Wow, that's really
and
powerful.
I wept and we held each other and I was like, this is why I do this. Mm-hmm. This is why it gets hard sometimes. I want to step outside myself, but I have to always be me.
I just got chills when you were talking about that. I think having a mission and a purpose as a pop star is something that can get like so lost by labels giving you opinions on like what to do and how to do it, the internet giving you feedback, yes. on like what you're doing. But when you stick to your North Star, I think eventually, even if it doesn't like immediately click with people, it does, because it's aligned with like your soul and what you want to do. And I feel like you've always definitely walked in that. Mm-hmm. And I feel it on too, because I think this doesn't sound like an album to me that was made by someone who's pretending that nothing bad has ever happened to them. It's still positive, and there are still so many uplifting and I think rousing moments that can make other people feel inspired. But you've also been through a lot in the last couple of years. And to me, this is like, there's so much classic Lizzo on this album. It's different. It kind of does harken back to your indie days a little bit. It's a little sparer from a production perspective. Your voice is crazy. Like, the vocals are so good. But I think the phrase when I was listening to the album that struck me as like the thesis statement of it was, this is the day in the life of an aspirational bad
bitch. Oh, thank you.
It's
for
like
saying that.
It's like sometimes I get knocked down, but like I'm still, my North Star is that I'm positive and I am a bad bitch. And I will get up.
Yes. I was almost gonna name the album A Day in the Life of an Aspirational Bad Bitch. And it's so crazy because Olivia dropped You Seem So Happy for a Girl or So Sad for a Girl So in Love. And I was like, damn it, I should have dropped the long title.
No, but just perfect.
Just perfect.
I think it encapsulates so many different parts of what the album is, because it's coming off of a polarizing and a controversial time. And I think that that word is just so often used against women in a specific way. And you have definitely been the recipient of a very misogynistic use of the word, I think.
Yes.
To be powerful, to be exerting your power, too confident, too creative, too in control, all of those things are seen as being a bitch. Did you have any hesitations about calling it bitch, like from a marketing perspective, I guess? Because I imagine it's a little bit more difficult to market an expletive as the title of an album.
It's been very difficult to market it, but I didn't have any hesitation. I feel like from my team, like label and management was coming to me and being like, you know, you're not going to be able to be on certain DSPs and you're not going to be able to be in certain stores and certain radio stations won't be able to say the name of it. Like, you should consider changing it. And honestly, I'm such a little shit that I was like, oh, that makes me want to name it more.
I love that. Yes.
Because I don't want to have any regrets. Well, I'm building a legacy. I'm not trying to like get rich quick or get popping quick or get what number one quick. I want to look back at this time and be like, oh my gosh, after Special, when she dropped bitch, it was a risk, but look what it did for her as an artist, as a creative human being. Like, this scratched an itch for me as a creative more than me someone trying to market an album or like, I just need to do good this time. It's like, no, I want to look back and be like, I was brave, you know, I took a risk.
You definitely were. And you've talked about how there was a whole album scrapped before this one came out, and I love Still Bad when it came out, but I was wondering, was that a moment where, because, you know, the label comes in your ear and tells you all of these things, I think it's kind of natural you're an artist. You want to succeed. You want people to hear your music. So if someone's coming to you and saying, people aren't going to hear it if you make this decision, it takes a lot of guts to say, I'm going to stick to what my creative spirit wants me to do. Have there been times in the past where you have like acquiesced to these things or said, you know what, okay, maybe I'll take the note, and you've regretted it later?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Yes, I feel like, well, not from a creative standpoint. I've always picked a different single than what the label picked every single time. Like, About Damn Time wasn't the single in my eyes. Mm-hmm. I thought it was Everybody's K.
And it should be too.
I was like, this is like generational. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like Thriller. But they were like, no, it's About Damn Time. And I was like, well, I mean, I write all my music, so I love all my babies, so sure. About Damn Time took the longest to write. It was a pain in the
You went through so many iterations of it, right?
Oh my God, so many choruses. Until I finally, the okay, all right, was like out of like just fatigue.
Literally, okay, I was like, all right.
Yo, okay, all right. And then everyone was like, oh, and I was like, are y'all f-ing with me?
But it's perfect. Yeah. Are there other versions of it that you like better, or do you like the recorded one the most?
I think I like the recorded one the most, but it's funny because Blake Slatkin, who wrote it with us, he has the pen and paper where I said, this dedicated to all the boys I hate. Like,
okay, I kind of love that.
He framed it, and now it's like, it's on my like trophy wall.
I love that. But kind of going back to a little bit, okay. I wanted to ask you about a couple of the songs that I really loved. So okay. I loved Too Nice. And something that really struck me about the song is how specific it feels. Mm-hmm. I pay the check, but no one checks on me.
Yes.
My come up changed you more than it changed me.
Yes.
What are you writing from there? What experiences are you drawing on?
I came out of a really toxic friend group. Mm-hmm. And I was friends with people that I had like given opportunities and like jobs to, because I was like, you're my homegirls.
You want
to
bring everyone with you when you're yes. coming up.
Yes. And as I was like, my star was rising, it happened really fast. And I didn't actually realize how fast it was happening. And I also didn't realize how it was changing people around me. And I'm such a people pleaser and enabler. And, you know, I don't speak up for myself. Like, and I had a lot of guilt for being successful. And I felt like, oh my gosh, I need to like give everything to, you can use me.
Yeah.
And I would, and I take a lot of responsibility for it, because I'd be like, use me as a platform, use me as anything. Like, you know, when the pandemic came and there was no work to be done, I was like, here, just take money. Like, yeah. I still paid them. And when I reflect on that time, I realize how much I was being manipulated. And, you know, now that I'm not friends with those people anymore, shout out Sophia Aris, though. I love DJ Sophia Aris. That's my girl for life. Like, love, not talking about her ever. But I heard stories of like, yeah, they were talking bad about me behind my back, and they were like being really manipulative with other people, and they were like trying to always assert dominance and being like really cruel. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I was so blinded by like friendship, and I didn't see it. And so I reflect on that time, and I'm writing from that perspective. And I think everyone can like relate to that.
100%. Yeah.
Like, it was a song that I wasn't going to put on the album.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Because it's when it comes to being positive, I think it's a very positive album. There's a lot of a positive statement to it. But sometimes, like in totality, there are moments as a snapshot of your life, like this wasn't the easiest period. So I think in my opinion, there needs to be like sneak peeks at what that was like.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that you describe yourself as like a people pleaser, or as someone that really wants to say yes to everybody or doesn't speak up for yourself. Because I feel like that is, and this is because you are so brilliant at what you do, that's not how you come across to the world. Yeah. I think that the world would be surprised to hear that you felt that way, because you seem so in control of everything and so in your power and fulfilled by what you do. It's, how do you reconcile? Is it kind of like having a Sasha Fierce? Like you have this version of yourself that can just turn it on?
I think it's like what I've learned a lot in therapy in the last few years is like, my inner child, Melissa, who wants everyone to be happy and is like, I want everyone to like be successful and yay. Like, you know, she's the one, when you get close to me, I would do anything for you.
Yeah.
I'll lay myself on the line. Mm-hmm. I'll lay myself on a puddle of water so you could walk across me.
Boil.
And I'm a Taurus. Mm-hmm. I'm loyal to a fault. Like, and I will bleed out for the people that I care about. And but then Lizzo, the performer, the you know, I don't take in the world. I have a tough shell because growing up, you know, big girl, black girl, in the South, like I had to protect myself mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. So, and I protect the people I care about, yeah. like fiercely. So I think what the world was seeing was this person who was like super self-assured. I'm very confident, very self-assured. And I don't take externally, like people you can't try me in yeah. the real world. But in my internal world, I'm like a softy and a lover and a giver. Like I give mm-hmm. to people I care about. So I was like, whoa, let me shorten this list to the people who are worthy because I'm getting taken advantage of.
your energy is expensive too. Like yeah. it shouldn't just be doled out to anybody that you meet. What you were saying really reminded me of To Be Loved. Because you can kind of hear that and like anxiety in it. Yeah, you're like, mm-hmm. I want it. I want to let people close to me, but I'm not sure that I'm in a place where I can accept that in.
Yes. And it's also like, am I worthy to be loved? Mm-hmm. I think that that's like the real underlying thing that's driving the insanity during that song.
Yeah.
Like, am I ready? And it's like, am I worthy?
Yeah.
That's the quiet that's so voice. Mm-hmm. I love that song.
And I think a lot of your songs do for people what that song can do for you, which is like, I accept you. You can be yourself.
Yes.
You are worthy. You do deserve things.
Yes.
And I think hearing you grapple with it and then come to the conclusion, yes, I do,
yeah.
is really important. And a song I love on this record that does that is That Girl.
Oh my God.
I love, that's the hit.
Atlantic Records. I wanted to shoot a music video for that song so bad. Immediately, like out the gate, like a year and a half ago. Because that song is, I always have like an opus. And I honestly do feel like on Special, Everybody's Gay was my opus. And I'm trying to think of my Cause I Love You opus. Maybe it's Juice or...
Oh, I love Juice.
Yeah.
I love Juice.
But this is That Girl. I was like, this is my like, it's still very body positive, but it's just, it has a little bit of edge to it.
There's a bite to it.
There's a bite to it. And it's not just about being like celebrating my body. And I was like, every baddie over 200, come outside and pop.
Yeah.
I need all my big girls to come outside and pop shit right now. But I also include this clip from Cat Williams in the end. He did stand up and he was like, you know, Lizzo's unproblematic, you know, but they'll come after you. It doesn't matter. Like, you can be fat, you can be black, but you can't be a fat black. You know, that's where they draw the line. And I remember being like, whoa, people thought that, you know, somebody was like, I think people thought he was like coming at you in a negative way. I said, I didn't see it that way at all.
Not at all.
I saw it as like, all I heard was Lizzo was unproblematic. And y'all, why are you doing this? And I thought it was such an interesting way to sum up my like experience in the public eye. And I put that at the end because I'm like, you tried to break my confidence and you didn't even make a dent.
Yes.
And it's not just about my body. It's not, but it's about the content of my character, who I am, and what I do, you know? I love That Girl.
It's so good.
I need a music video stat.
You do. We need a budget for a music video right
budget.
Now. I thought also having someone else say that
yes.
towards the end of the song was really important to hear like an outside voice come in because there have been so many outside voices delivering opinions on what kind of artist you are. And I love that idea also too of it being like, well, you can only be one of these things. Mm-hmm. You can be big, you can be black, you can be a bitch, you can't be all of them.
Yes.
And it's like, well, why not?
Right.
Why
I
not?
Contain multitudes.
I'm a lover.
Literally.
A
but that's why I named the album as well. Like, because that song, I think, summed up everything. Like, it's a little bit of everything all mixed into one, you know? And I do think that pop stars are put in a box and you can only be one thing. And I was shocked to discover that because I really don't, like, bother myself with the exterior of what's happening while I'm going. Mm-hmm. And once I realized, oh, girl, you've been a brand. Like, losing weight up the brand. I'm like, what do you mean up the brand? I'm a human being. I do whatever I want to do.
My body.
And now I realize after it hurt so many people's feelings that my body changed, like I was like, oh, this is bigger than me. No pun intended.
Yeah. Being a pop star, you are a product as well. You are a message. You are a mirror that society uses to like understand itself.
Yes.
People really litigate their own neuroses on your personal decisions.
Yes.
So I think the weight loss thing was so like, it came in this moment of like skinny being back in. Yes. And I think people felt that it was hypocritical somehow for you to make this choice that you wanted to make. And I think it's unfair. And it's, you can't be a prisoner to what people think
yes.
about you.
Yes.
But it must have felt difficult to have even your own fans being like, we're disappointed.
Yeah. That I think was the hardest part, when people who I know actually care about me, because the people who,
they'll say anything.
My God, I don't care what y'all think or say. Keep yapping. Keep me in the headlines. But my actual fans being hurt by it hurt me. And I think that you can look up any interview I have done, any and every single one. I am so careful about the way I talk about this experience that I've had with my body, in my body, to the public, because of those people. That's why mm-hmm. I am the way that I am. And that's why I continue to say, for me, it was a weight release. For me, it was about specific things and not yeah. just aesthetics. For me, I truly loved being in my body at all sizes. And my body's going to continue to change. And I need y'all to change with me. You know, that is, I do it for them.
And the music has been very consistent and clear, no mm-hmm. matter what size you are or whatever weight release journey you've been on.
Yes.
The message is the same.
Yes.
Like, that girl is just, sounds like something that could have been on 'Cause I Love You Too.
Yes.
There's a through line between all of those songs. And that shows, I think, that you're not doing this to be a stunt or do yes. something crazy.
And it's like, it's because I love my body, period. Yeah. Like, somebody was like, Lizzo said something about it's okay to be fat. And I'm like, well, I did say it's okay to be fat, but I also didn't say it's only okay to be fat.
Yeah. You said it's okay to love your body that you're in, whatever that looks like.
Right. It's okay. And that's why people, no matter what size they are, resonate with my music. Mm-hmm. I have fans of all shapes and sizes because the message is universal. It just happens to be coming from mm-hmm. me. You know, but I don't think they can't do, they got
to
put
it
you in that box.
It doesn't always connect. There has to be, you are this or you are that.
Yes.
Which brings me to something that I actually wanted to talk to you about, because I think this is so interesting and artists are starting to pick up on this language. So I've talked about the Kia Asylum a couple of times. The Kia Asylum is, and the thing is, my recent revelation about it has been that it's a very misogynistic term, because yes. there are no men in the Kia Asylum.
Yes.
And let me tell you, there are plenty of men that are in the Kia Asylum yeah. currently, or exist permanently in the Kia Asylum, and they don't get this kind of like obsessive focus on them flopping that
yes.
women get. So I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about seeing when people describe what you're doing as like flopping or being in the Kia Asylum? Does it feel like restrictive to you? How does it resonate with you?
I have a lot of thoughts about it mm-hmm. because, first of all, I was so shocked when people kept saying Kia, because it's about Kaya.
Right.
The rapper, My Neck, My Back. And I think
legend.
That, we still talk about her.
We still talk about her.
Her record, she got records. That My Neck, My Back is a hit.
Yeah.
And I think even that is backhanded in itself, to name it after this extremely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I just put my own foot in my
yes.
mouth. But this extremely talented, incredible, like, pillar in the Black community and in Black rap music. And then it's this weapon mm-hmm. that targets only women and a lot of Black women, let's be real. So I think it's a little strange. But one thing about it, I think it's just funny for people. And I think it should remain funny. Mm-hmm. It should remain a meme, because now it's evolved to where it's this thing where it's like, even the most successful, somebody could be the most successful artist last year, and now they're back in the Kaya Asylum.
Today, you're in it. You never know when you're going to escape it, I suppose.
So I'm just like, what is it really? I think it's nebulous. And I think it's nebulous. And I do think it's just like a na 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 na. I think it's a tool to bully mm-hmm. artists and have power over them. It probably used to mean something, but now I think it's nonsense. I feel like I can't be in the Kaya Asylum. I have Grammys and world record music. I have
it's
number
ridiculous
one.
When
I
you
have
say.
A diamond record. I am a successful
Truth
artist.
Truth Hurts went diamond today. I don't
Truth
know if you mentioned
is,
that.
Truth Hurts is diamond.
So Kaya Asylum where?
Where? I can't be. I think there should be criteria.
That having a Grammy is for sure. You
yes.
cannot be in the asylum.
You
You're
just
not
can't
there
be
anymore.
In the asylum.
No, a diamond, a platinum
Grammys,
record.
Grammys, diamond records, platinum records, number ones in the Guinness World Book of Record. I can't be in there. I'm impervious to it. Mm-hmm. Save that for the one hit wonders. No
or the
shade.
Or the no hit wonders. That's really who belongs there. And it's no shade to them, because the beautiful thing about the asylum, I suppose, is that you can climb your way out at any time.
You sure can.
You can.
And you know what, baby? I'm, you know what? I'm climbing my way out. How about that? If there's a, if I'm in the Kaya asylum, I'm climbing my way out.
Period.
But I don't think that I think that I'm impervious. I'm like, do you know who my father is?
I 100%
I get
agree.
A slap on the wrist.
Yes. You get a slap on the wrist and then you get free to go back on your non-asylum days.
Yes.
But how do you feel in June 2026? Like, how do you feel? How do you describe where you are in your career? Like a real answer, not like a PR line.
Yeah. I feel like I'm in the weeds a little bit. I had so much fun last year when I dropped My Face Hurts from Smiling. I think that was the most fun I've had as a pop artist in the last like since Special.
Wow.
That was the most fun I've had. And even writing was really emotionally exhausting for me, because I wrote like over 120, 150 songs. And I've been writing since September 2023 for this album that just came out in 2026. And I had to span every emotion and come back to me again. And that's work. That's emotional labor. My Face Hurts from Smiling, I did in a week. And I was like, oh, I'm popping my This is so fun. And I want to get back there. I think right now, dropping the album, I took it to heart really, really heavily. Not because I wanted to be like back again, but because I just felt like the music was so good, and I just knew that the stories would connect with people if they chose to discover them. And I still feel that way. I still feel like people, when they consume and discover the music, they'll feel an emotional connection and be like, oh, actually, whoa, she stole my man. I hate this forever. Mm-hmm. Like, what a record. Like, whose hair is this?
That song killed me.
She was like, whose hair is this? Like, give me an opportunity to sing that song live and you will fall in love with it. And that's how I feel about all of the music. I can't wait for people to discover it. I'm not going to rush you. Mm-hmm. There's no rush for you to fall in love with this music, honey. I've never been that girl. So I think right now, I kind of hurt my own, this is the non-PR, I hurt my own feelings. Mm-hmm. And I was really stressed and I was really sad for a few days, because I just was like, wait a minute, this is like some of my best stuff. Like, I want people to find it. And I had to come to the terms, I had to come to terms with the fact that not only is the music industry different in the last 3 years, and we need to talk about that. We need to talk about the radio aspect that I got my chewed out for, but it's mm-hmm. it's happening and it's true. But also my relationship and my connection musically with the world is different, and I think I had to kind of mourn that. And now I was like, shake it off.
Yeah, you have to
shake it off.
You have to shake it off
and move forward. And that's why I'm in the studio today, because I'm like, okay, well, what are you gonna do?
Keep going.
You have to keep going.
Yeah. I mean, you described it earlier as surfing, and it must be really jarring to go from record of the year, this like insane arena tour, to all of a sudden like having to really scrap for yes. people to give you a minute. So I wanted to ask the label situation, like the traditional structure that is supporting artists is failing, I think, or it's changing in a way that is not useful to every artist. So from the outside, I think for everybody, it looks like you went from an artist that you were an artist that a label would move heaven and earth for, right? Like, they would give you all these campaigns, these huge TV looks, like as much as you want, basically, for whatever you want to do. And now we're hearing you on socials being like, my label isn't promoting my album. When did you kind of feel the shift from you're a priority to you're on your own, or you need to prove to us that you deserve this?
I'll say this about my label currently. I do believe I'm a priority in the building. Mm-hmm. But I think what they're able to do is significantly, and when I say significantly, I mean significantly less than what they were able to do even 3-4 years ago, five years ago, for an artist. Mm-hmm. For an artist of my size, for a smaller artist, especially the smaller new artist.
How do you break through?
You have to do it all on your own. I was having a conversation the other day with my label, and we were talking about the album. We were talking about how much how many eyes are on me, how many people are talking about my album, how many streams I get on social media and views, I mean, of like
good press too.
Great press. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't convert to streams overwhelmingly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, where's the disconnect? And they were like, well, that's in the hands of the people. And I remember being, and I was like, whoa, I was like, y'all, it's 2026. In 1996, 2006, mm-hmm. even 2016.
I was just about to say.
They would have never said that. They would have been like, oh no, we got you.
We'll try this. We'll do that.
We'll try that. But now literally everything is in the hands of the people. So I think I was just like really emotional and really upset because I had had a meeting a month prior where I had said all these ideas. Me and my creative director, we had all these cool ideas for like billboards and like hotlines and like interactive things. And a month later, I was talking to my creative director and he was like, yeah, why haven't they implemented any? And I was like, yeah, why haven't they? And I was like, what's going on? My album's coming out soon. And mm-hmm. I freaked out. And I went on the internet, you know, because no one answered the phone. Oops.
Well, if no one's answering the phone, what are you supposed to do?
Classic Lizzo. Mm-hmm. Crying in a wig cap on the internet. But I did. And I think like after coming back and like actually breathing and thinking about it, it's not about the label just being like, Lizzo, you're not a priority. It was just like, Lizzo, this is what we're able to do. And it's not as much as we used to be able to do.
The situation has just changed.
I'm not the only person experiencing it. I'm just the only one talking about it.
And that's so important because I don't understand why it has to be this big secret that the labels are limited in what they're able to do, that the landscape is shifting. And if we don't talk about it, then I think artists don't get a chance to really have their music go further than a one shot.
Yeah.
And the beauty of social media is that you can have so many different shots.
Yes.
But I wanted to ask you, like, how direct have you been behind the scenes? Like, are you literally in rooms saying, why are you not spending money on this project? Or why can't I have this? It sounds like you are.
I also want to say my label in particular, they are keeping up with the times. Atlantic Records, I think, is very like they're fingers on like the pulse and they're just like trying to keep up.
They're trying a lot of different things. We'll give that to them.
It's moving so quickly that it's almost like it's virtually impossible to keep up. The music industry used to change. Like, I remember they told me, like, every 3 to 6 months. Now it's, like, every week.
Actually, it is, like, every week, now that I think about it.
Every week.
I don't know how, as an artist, you can even keep on top of all the different... And because technically, it's, like, there's so many things you can try and do, right? But at a certain point, it's, like, throwing spaghetti at the wall. It's,
yes.
Like, well, how do I know what is actually going to stick? You don't. You just have to keep throwing stuff.
I mean, in 2023, TikTok used to mean something for streaming, and now in 2026, 3 years later, it means nothing.
We have YouTube videos. They don't count for streaming
YouTube
anymore.
Doesn't count as of this year. Like, y'all.
Which is going to kill the art of the music video, can I say, which is that's a real disappointment that I've seen in this new iteration of the music industry is that visuals are really deprioritized.
Yes.
And visuals bring it to life. Pop
yes.
is about like circumstance and performance and that camp and being
yes.
extra. And not having that is a real disservice to, especially an artist like you, who
yeah.
has such a, you have such a presence that is translated even better when you're able to show your aesthetics and
yes.
show us your vibe and your look. Like you have some iconic music videos.
Mm-hmm.
So that must have been frustrating for you with this album. Like roll out.
I think it's unfortunate. I think I still put out really good videos for the sake of art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the Don't Make Me Love You video is an incredible, I mean, it's video
beautiful.
Of the year. Hello.
Yes.
And I think the video is a work of art as well. And I even said that in my post. I said, you know, in an age where people are just doing stunts to get your attention, like there's not a lot of art being put out. And I'm like, don't just watch this because it's my music video. Watch it because this is Child, the director's mm-hmm. art.
Yeah.
And it's so good. That happened. And I think that's unfortunate. I also think that like radio not having the significance it used to have, like a radio campaign used to kind of be coupled with a song.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, this is the song, this is the radio campaign.
You get the simultaneous push.
Simultaneously. And then streaming was the third leg. Now, radio out of the way, when a song comes out, if it doesn't stream a certain amount, it won't go to radio. Like radio campaigns are now built around streams.
It's backwards.
Yes.
It used to be that one informed the other. And now
yes.
it's this way, that it has to pop off on streaming first.
Yes. And this is as of late. This mm-hmm. is, everyone was trying to come at me when I was like, yeah, I was a radio darling. And they were like, well, streaming's been a thing since 2016. And I'm like, yeah, duh. But
not it tabulated wasn't, in this way.
You don't under, that's what I'd be like, you on the internet. You're not signed to a major label. You're not an yeah. artist. You don't get it. This is what I've been doing since 2016. I've watched it change. I know what I'm talking about, sweetie. Sit mm-hmm. back and learn.
Yes.
Their radio campaigns and singles used to be hand in hand. And now if you don't stream a certain amount, there is no radio campaign.
Yeah.
And I'm a radio darling. Like, I'm an iHeart queen. Like, and my
you
fans,
make music that goes on the radio and plays around the world.
Like, I'm a pop star.
When I'm in Singapore, I hear you in the cab on the way to the grocery store. Like,
hello.
That's the place to be. Yeah.
And that's what people don't, it's not clicking to them because they're so stream obsessed and like number obsessed. And I'm like, I get it, honey, but this is how the business works. And this is how the business has changed in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. Straight up. And so that part also has shifted the landscape with pop. And I think now people are just like, I think something really crazy happened when do you remember on TikTok when musical artists started going on and being like, my label's telling me to make a TikTok, so now yeah. I have to make a, like mm-hmm. that was like the trend for a while, like a bunch of artists were doing that because that was actually happening. And now it's like, the artist is actually everything. Yeah. Like, you have to do it all.
You are the social media manager. Yes. You are the content production house.
Yes.
You do everything. And that is such an incredible weight to carry on top of making amazing music, yes. which really should be your full-time job.
Right.
Having to do and wear all of those hats at once seems so stressful.
Yeah. But I also am a part of... it's partly my fault because I was a part of a generation of artists who, like, did that naturally, like mm-hmm. me and Lil Nas X and Billie
well,
Eilish.
You were
and...
such a successful independent artist for so long as well. This isn't an unfamiliar game to you. It's just the tools are different.
Yes. And it was fun. Mm-hmm. And it still is fun for me. And I remember when it stopped, when it turned from me just like, you know, fucking around on social media to like, this is what you have to do. I was like, whoa. I was like, what do you mean is what I have to do?
I thought this was fun.
Literally. And they were like, there's a label that had, when in the early days, had a Lizzo, they called it the Lizzo department as a joke for their like artist TikTok relations.
Wow.
Because I was like.
The blueprint.
I was just.
The blueprint. Because you've been on TikTok.
Oh my God, since Renegade. Mm-hmm. I was on Ellen doing it.
Not Ellen.
That's how you know. Well, I was a part of the clips.
The Renegade too. Oh my God. The
Renegade.
That's prehistoric TikTok.
No, literally a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. Like, but I had a Musical.ly.
But you're still popping.
Yeah.
I'm seeing the TikToks going viral, but you've also mentioned that there is a censorship that goes on yes. on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what a lot of people are trying to figure out, not even just artists in general, this happens to me all the time too. It's like, why are there are certain things that get silenced and pushed down and not allowed to spread? And when you're trying to promote an album, that can be incredibly frustrating. What have yeah. you noticed in that respect?
I've noticed that, you know what, I'm just going to make a blanket statement. TikTok has become a huge marketplace. And so now most of TikTok is ads. And they make a lot of money from those ads. If you are trying to sell something and it's not a part of that marketplace, I do think that there's some sort of mechanism or system that kind of suppresses that.
That makes total sense.
And I think that, like, if my album was on TikTok Shop, which, hello!
Can it be? Do they sell albums on TikTok?
I don't know, but we should.
Why don't we? Let's see. Lizzo is the first artist to announce that she's available on TikTok Shop.
Gagging.
When it's the number one product on TikTok
no,
Shop? Well, yes.
Literally,
then
that's such a good
see.
Idea, Kevin. Write it down. Is. Are you kidding me? But I think if you were doing that, I think your videos would be pushed more into the algorithm and onto the FYP. So the reason why I know that is because on my private page, Lizzo IRL, I have like over 300,000 followers, or I should say fans and lesbians who love me.
This is your like diehard community. These yes. are the people that want to see every single thing that you post.
Yes. They don't see nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll tell me, this is, and I need y'all to know that I'm not sitting up here complaining, being a conspiracy theorist. This came from every video I post. Somebody was like, hey girl, they're suppressing your videos. Or they'll be like, your video froze and cut me and kicks me off TikTok. They were like, every time you talk about anything like political or anything like about the industry or anything about your music, I get kicked off of TikTok and have to get back on. And I'm saying hundreds and hundreds of people telling me this for a long period of time until I finally say, okay, what's going on?
There's something happening. Yeah, no, I've seen it too. I've seen the comments. I've also seen how in on that account of yours specifically, like there are certain posts that are basically identical in tone, but if one of them leans a little bit more heavily into like, my album's coming out.
Yep. Ineligible for, it was like, it's like ineligible for a suggestion or something like that.
That is so strange. That barely happens to me. And I'm saying crazy shit on TikTok. So what's the deal? Why are they silencing Lizzo?
I don't know.
We want to know.
Maybe they don't want people loving themselves.
And you know what? I think TikTok doesn't want people to love themselves. That's kind of the whole business model. It's like rage bait over and over.
Yeah.
So perhaps you are trying to like bring something into the space that like the platform isn't prioritizing.
Yeah. And it's like, I rage bait with love. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, I would be that girl.
You're good at
like,
it too.
Hello. Mm-hmm. My belly would be out and I'd be like, what's good? What's
I'm good feeling way? Myself. Do you I'm have something to myself. Say?
Hello. Say something. I dare you.
What do you think? So we've talked about like the things that kind of held you back. What do you think you've learned though about how to move as a musician? What do you think moves the needle for a rollout for an album on social media? Are there like formats you've discovered that have worked for you? Ideas that you really like?
One thing that will never go out of style is authenticity. Mm. I've noticed that like the more real you are, the more people want to consume whatever content you've put out, whatever song you're putting out. And I even noticed that with like my posts, like I have a bunch of like super promotional posts, but if they're like not like, like if I am super glammed up and I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, bitch is out today, that versus me with like a bun in my head
or the
and like,
wig cap crying, that'll go viral.
Wig cap crying, bonnet, whatever, bun, oversized t-shirt sitting on my couch goes crazy. And I'm like,
And that's also kind of, that really reminds me of the distinction between 2016 and 2026 as well, because it used to be the glam.
Yes.
It was like the full beat, yes. The full outfit. That was really what popped you off as a star. Now it seems that people want to have access to you as a person, which I think is hard because you probably want to be seen as an artist, not a content creator. There's like a difference between those two things, oh my right? God.
I think that I accidentally became like a content creator / musician. And I was just during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I think the pandemic really did it because I was just like, somebody came up to me the other day and they were like, you got us through the pandemic. Thank you. Because I was just like making vegan meals.
Yeah.
And like being
connecting
silly.
Connecting with people when we were also isolated.
Yeah. And it was fun. Mm-hmm. But I think some people were like, well, this is just a content creator. This is just a TikToker. And you have to remember, like, sometimes I'll see people online and be like, this is just a TikToker. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, this is a whole rapper with mm-hmm. a whole career. There was a few people like that,
yeah.
You know? And then there's Addison Rae, who did the opposite. TikToker yeah,
transitioned
to pop star.
From it. Yeah, it's
and then
so
there's some people who only know her as a pop star now and don't even know she was doing a Renegade back in 2019.
It's true. But I've also found, like, with Addison specifically, because I love Addison Down, and she's so talented and so clever. But there's a certain subset of people that will never take her seriously because she was a TikToker.
Yeah.
So I find the audience can be very unfair. It's like artists have to use social media to promote their work. There's no choice, but you can't trap them in that because they need to exist in the context of doing shows, making music, being out there in the world.
But I think her not being taken seriously for being a TikToker is the same as in the 90s when they didn't take Britney Spears seriously.
Or, 100%.
You know what I mean? Jessica Simpson mm-hmm. for being a blonde pop star.
Yeah.
And I think that's like,
it's misogyny.
It's misogyny and it comes with that territory. And I think she's done a great job of like saying it.
Who do you look at on social media and see the way they're navigating it and think, yeah, I like that?
I laugh because people gonna be like, girl, I don't know. I love Doja Cat. I do.
Doja Cat.
I love Doja Cat. But she be doing the little filters.
Doja is like a next level troll. She is so good at trolling people.
I love her so much.
much.
And she's funny.
She's so funny.
Like, she's just, and it's just like, she really just shows her personality. She'll be in bed and she'll like spam post, which I love to spam post as well. But my team has been like, hey, can you not like post 12 videos in the same night? I'm like, why?
Doja did it.
It's so, I mean, yeah, I was doing this like years ago and my label was like, it just, people feel like you have too much time on your hands. I was like, damn.
I'm just in bed at night after a full, beautiful day of doing gorgeous things. Hello. Having fun on my phone.
I'm in glam. Like, let me use the glam. But no, I think Doja Cat is really good at, like, just not giving a fuck and being herself. And it really, she wins when she does that. I also think that Charlie is really good. Miss XCX.
She's really good at getting a trend going.
Yes. Oh, mm-hmm. My gosh. She's
all
so
her
good.
Songs have that, like, really good music.
I'm like, who came up with that? Like, how did that happen? And then there's like a CapCut template for it now. I'm like, genius.
The syndication is very clever.
Yes, I think. And she doesn't have to do much mm-hmm. to get a lot done, which mm-hmm. I think is like really inspiring to see. And I think she has people who really believe her. I also, on the far other end of it, where it's she's really minimal but effective, is Olivia Rodrigo. Every post I see of her, I'm like, she's just herself.
And she's an online girl, I feel. She's not terminally online, but she's like of that generation that really grew up with TikTok being a dominant force in their lives, yes. of understanding themselves. Yes. And so I think the internet just kind of globs onto her because she's so native to the platform.
Yes. And terminally online is so crazy because that phrase, it went from chronic to like terminal.
Oh,
like,
I'm terminally online. I'm like, that's my whole thing.
The disease has...
It's terminal progress. For me. Yeah, I made it my career. It's terminal.
It's chronic, honey. But no, you can tell that she's like very self-aware. And I think she's really smart about like the sounds that she chooses and like the content pieces that she makes. And you can tell like she shot some of it in Versailles, like yes. shooting her video, but she doesn't drop it until
it's
like
shot
weeks
on the
and
phone,
months. Like,
not the camera.
So good. So I love Miss Rodrigo's work.
Mm-hmm, that new
would you
album.
Call her Godlivia Godrigo?
Godlivia Godrigo. Yes. And she is. That new album is great.
Yeah, I honestly, if there's someone who I'm like envious of when it comes to like the style of music they make and the songs that they get to make, it is her, because my little like pop rock heart mm-hmm. she just warms it when I hear. I'm like, God, I miss this.
It's like
music.
An old friend. Because yes. you just don't hear music, pop music like this being made anymore.
Exactly.
But I do think there are definitely moments on that I'm feeling that from you.
Oh, yeah. She Stole My Man is a whole moment. Like, that's my little rawr, rawr moment. And then I had another record called So Done that, like, is fully Evanescence. And I was like, I can't put this on this album. It's a little too far.
Did you do, like, a rock album ever?
Absolutely.
Do it.
I absolutely. Oh, yeah. But here's my problem. And I want to ask you, because you're a purveyor of pop, you mm-hmm. I have a lot of things that I'm passionate about and that I can do. I was in a rock band when I was like 19. Like, I was freestyle rapping in the streets in Houston. Like, I can sing soul. Apparently, I learned how to sing soul.
Play the flute.
I can play the flute, so I could do classical music. Is it the way I did My Face Hurts from Smiling last year? I was like, I'm just going to do a rap mixtape. Can I, what does it look like if this summer I put out a whole rock and roll mixtape like I did last summer, and every summer I just drop a mixtape of music I feel like doing? Is that insane?
Not at all. Not at all. I think that's great. Well, I think the trick to like making music now, it seems to me, is that it really, everything about being an artist is rewarded by more. It's like more and yeah. more content. And I think it's lucky, people like Olivia Rodrigo are in a very rare position that can't really be replicated, where she can go away for 3 or 4 years yes. and do nothing and come back with yes. 13 songs and it's a smash.
Yes.
I'd say for most artists, that's not a reality. So that's why we're seeing a lot of like deluxe versions of albums and like the remixes and stuff like that. But I actually think the mixtape is a medium that is going to come back in a big way yeah. because it reduces the pressure on the artist to make something that is like, that needs a huge budget, that the label says whatever. Mm-hmm. It gives you so much freedom. I also think it's a mode that you're really familiar and operating in, and it speaks to you.
Yeah.
Like, if you feel good about it, you said it was the most fun that you've had since you made fun. Special.
Yeah.
And was hard to make, it seems. Like, it was rewarding, but it required a lot of discipline to really get it down to what it was. I think that you should be free and, like, let your freak flag fly and show people all the different sides of you.
Yeah.
But what to me, it seems like what you mentioned and what I think is going to carry through whatever you do is that you have your purpose, which is I want to be positive.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean forced positivity. I think Too Nice is a good example of how, like, the story is positive, but there are aspects of real life, because life is not always positive, that are tricky or challenging. And I think that you, your candor as well, you're a really good writer. I don't think that you get enough credit for that. You're a really good lyricist. So I think that continuing to be honest, like writing about how you're feeling, like writing about what it feels like to be going from being on the stage, getting the record of the year, to trying to do this now and finding a new sense of freedom in it, but also being scared and not figuring it out. Like that's, I'm so interested in where you're going now.
Yeah.
So I think there's so much scope for you to explore. The mixtape a year is a great idea.
Another thing I learned was more is more. Now, because Olivia being one of the only people who can disappear for 3 to 4 years, drop a 13-track album and it being a smash, that was the industry standard for pop artists.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was.
It used to be.
Everyone, like, a pop artist would drop, they would take over the world for a year and a half, then they would disappear, and then they would come back every 2 to 3, 3 to 5 sometimes, years. Now, baby, these pop girls are dropping records like rappers.
You can't go away. You can't go away.
You can't take a break.
It makes the quality of the music suffer sometimes, I think. But I think that the thing about a mixtape, though, is that it's more free than an album. Like, you can experiment. You can have interludes. Like, the song lengths don't have to be so calculated.
Right.
Like, you really can just play with the form. And I think it seems to me, for you, you're in this really, like, generative moment. You have a lot of creative, like, momentum behind you. And I think that just, like, getting it out and putting it out the way that you've been doing so far and attaching less pressure to like an album campaign and really just trying to see like, okay, here's the mixtape. Can I get a moment here? Can I get a moment there?
Yeah.
Can I get 10 moments from this? And you might. That's the thing.
Yeah. I'm capable of making so much music.
Yeah.
And I think I've like closed the tap, like because I was doing the pop star thing where it's like, okay, you work on an album for 2 years, you tour for 2 years, you take 2 years off, you do it again. And now I'm like, yeah, but I can make a mixtape in a week. Like, what else can I do?
And it will fill you with joy and make you excited in a way you haven't felt in a long time.
And do well. Like, you know, it wasn't like streamer of the year, but damn.
No, people loved it. People really loved it.
Yeah, like I look at the stats now, it's like people still listen to Yitty on Yo Titties. You know, people still listen to Left Right. People are still listening to Still Came. They still listening to IRL with SZA and Doja Cat. Like, I performed it at the rodeo, 70,000 people. I was doing all my little hits. And then once I got to the mixtape section, I just heard a roar in the crowd. Like,
now that is the best positive sign ever.
It was crazy. And I was like, wait a minute.
I'm onto something.
Y'all liked it?
Yes. But I really think that's the answer because I don't know. I don't know that the traditional release format is working for you right now.
Yeah, it's not. It's not working for me.
Not working for a lot of people.
Right.
It's not just you that it's not working for. It's working for not working for a lot of people.
But nobody, I think, is going to be honest enough to admit that. And I also need people to know it's like, it's not your fault. Like, oh my gosh, my little artist, my lovies, it's not your fault. Like, there's something strange going on right now. And I think a lot of people don't realize how much pressure artists put on themselves because we're so sensitive and we want to make music for the people. Like, you know what I mean?
You want people to like what you do. It's a natural instinct that you have. Like, I made this. It came from me. I want to share it with you. So for it to not always go the way that you want it to go is hard and difficult.
Yeah. And it's like in the hierarchy of everything of life, we're the entertainers. And we're just like, hey, we want to make you happy. We want to make you dance. We want to make you move. We want to make you feel something. And when that doesn't happen, we do feel like failures.
It can be soul crushing. Can you think of a moment where you really felt kind of a little bit crushed in that way, like this sensation you're talking about?
I always talk about how that Truth Hurts moment happened where I released it in 2017 and like it didn't move or shake nothing. And I was like, I'm gonna quit music. And I was like, no, let me just be happy with being this kind of artist. Like, I don't need nothing bigger than this. And then Truth Hurts blew up 3 years later. But I recently had another one where I, like with this album, I think with I kind of like took control a little bit and was like, yo, what's going on? Like, I used to announce that my album was coming and I would have the pre-saves and I would have the pre-orders. And then my label, they updated me. And this was like 3 weeks before the album dropped. And I was like, okay, what we looking at? What's the pre-save? And they gave me the number and I said, what's the goal? And they were like, da, da, da. And I was like, all right. And then I was like, let me go full force. And I went out and I was hanging up posters and I was talking to people and I was connecting and I had Stan Twitter in a frenzy. They was making all these juice memes.
You were DIYing a major label album release.
And it was really, really fun. Mm-hmm. I had so much fun, y'all. Like, that was like, oh my God, this is like, I feel like 2019 Lizzo again. Like, I feel like I'm connecting with the people, a woman of the people. And then I had all of these high hopes, I think, for what we would do the first week. And it didn't match. I was so excited because I met my pre-save goal and I met all of that. And then it dropped and I was like, oh, okay, this isn't what I kind of thought it would be. I didn't think it would be crazy, but I also didn't think it would be this. And I think that there was like 24 hours of my life where I based my success and my worth on a number. Mm-hmm. And I think that was soul crushing. And I had to remind myself, I was like, oh my God, like, thank God for Solana. SZA called me. She just called me. She was like, hey, you're on my mind. And I was like, am I a failure? And she was like, oh my God, no. She was like, she's so sweet. And I like meditated and I prayed on it. And I was like, this is why I don't judge myself, mm-hmm. my success or my impact on numbers. This is why I don't do that, because it's soul crushing if you do. Because mm-hmm. I could turn around and then, you know, you look at the thing and it's like, oh, a billion streams. Oh, diamond record. And I'm like, but I can't judge my success on that either, because that goes away. Mm-hmm. So I had to reframe and be like, but aren't you proud of yourself? And I was like, yeah, I actually am proud of myself.
Yeah.
Aren't you excited to like sing these songs? Aren't you glad they're out? Yeah. And aren't you excited to like write new stuff? Yeah.
And you get to meet all of these people that are hugging you and telling you these profound impacts that you've had on their lives. Like, that I think is a really great measure of success as an artist. Like, are you touching people's lives? Are you making their lives better? For you, that's a resounding yes. And you've been doing that since you came out. So when you think, so cultural impact is something that you mentioned. And I think people, I don't know why, but people were like,
so mad.
They were mad about it. But I was like, I can't actually, the cultural impact is kind of the main thing of your career. I feel like everything that you do causes a conversation, positive or negative, about issues and things in society that are much bigger than just you or just your music. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is kind of a barometer that can't really be taken away from you.
You know what's so weird? People on the internet really try to gaslight, because I was like, cultural impact over streams. That's applicable to me. If it's not applicable to your fave, then I don't know who your fave is, but don't you want your fave to have more cultural impact than streams?
How are streams the be all and end all?
You want it to at least be equal. Mm-hmm. If you're, okay, here's the crazy part. If your fave is a crazy, like gets crazy streams, don't you at least want their cultural impact to be like equal, if not greater?
Yeah, you like, want it to match.
What we'll be talking about, why did this trigger y'all so much? And then somebody was like, and you have neither. And I'm like,
oh, no way.
Come on now. At this point, now you're just saying things to be mean, because I literally am in the billion stream club, which is not a lot of us.
Diamond record.
The diamond record club, which is like, 7 black women, including Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston, Beyonce, SZA. Like, there's not a lot of us. And the cultural impact that I've had, not only on the music industry, with like the sound of like Juice, mm-hmm. the sound of that like light, like disco pop funk mm-hmm. sound.
You kind of brought live instruments back to pop at a time when pop was really, really like stark and bleak.
And electric and digital mm-hmm. and I'm like, come on, guys. Like, let's
get a guitar up in this.
Hello. Let's not negate that, honey. Mm-hmm. Like, the way that I speak of myself, like the cultural impact it's had on people and body positivity. I came on the scene and big girls were getting campaigns.
Yeah.
There was a whole department where like, we need a Lizzo type for this ad, for this show. Big girls were getting the recognition they deserve. Like, please stop. Yeah. Don't play with me.
The cultural impact really, I mean, the streams, you literally can't argue with them because they're on paper. But I also think that your cultural impact is equivalent to a stream on a piece of paper. It is as undeniable.
Yeah.
So I think people really can't take that away from you.
And like, the other funny thing is like, Lizzo's biggest fan is Lizzo. Good.
As it should be.
I don't know who your stans are. I don't know how you feel about yourself, but baby, I am my
If you don't love fan. Your music, who will?
So I feel like a lot of insults that are hurled at me are like really desperate. I think they're like desperate to hurt me because it's like, they're like thinly veiled compliments.
Yeah. It's like you once were, but now.
Yeah, I'm like, girl, like I love being my number one fan. That's what my music mm-hmm. is all about.
And I guess it's not cool anymore culturally to yes. try or yes. to care yes. or to be earnest. And you at this particular moment are really trying and caring and being like, yeah. this is my music that I made. And I would like you, if you want to, hear it.
But I feel like we've been apathetic for so long. Like apathy has been like trendy for the last few years. I might single-handedly, no.
say it. You might single-handedly.
Giving a trying back.
Yeah. Say it. Bring earnestness back into the spotlight. I need to bring it back. Because, again, you can't walk through your life being apathetic. It makes you feel sad.
Yeah.
And you also need a certain level of, like, delusion and confidence to yes. get anywhere and do anything.
Yes.
So I think it's very important for other artists. This is one of the last questions I wanted to ask you, too, for other artists. Like, what would you want to say to a baby artist breaking through or that, like, has maybe had a little bit of a come up but hasn't quite broken through, might be feeling a little bit discouraged? Like, what would you say for this new era of pop? What's your advice?
I would say that everything is changing at such a rapid pace that don't take anything personally. Like, I have to tell myself on a daily basis when things don't go my way or go the way that I thought it would go, that it's not personal, that it's happening to my contemporaries, that it's happening to my peers, and that the only people that it's not happening to are the exception mm-hmm. to the rule. And it's like, yeah, maybe I thought I was going to be the exception, but I wasn't. And mm-hmm. it's okay. So I think really, really, really be like kind on yourself. But also I would say to a young artist, oh my God, I say this all the time. I wish I could be a discoverable artist right now because that is what moves the dial. Mm-hmm. Like, people are driven by nostalgia and discovery.
Yeah.
Like, that is what...
Well, that's a great insight.
It's literally what's driving any emotion these days. Like, if they can discover... And some people are benefiting from nostalgia plus discovery, like Charlie XCX, like Chapel Roan, like these Zara Larsons, like people who are like discovering things that came out in the past. Like, I've benefited from discovery and nostalgia. So because you're in this position, there's no limit to where you can go. Because once people want to find you, they're going to consume it and consume it and consume it. And then once you get to that position, remember, it's fickle. It comes and goes. Ride the wave. I feel like the music landscape right now is the ocean and there's waves that are coming. Don't let the waves overtake you. I may not be surfing at the top of the wave right now, but I'm paddling, baby.
You're making it work.
I'm paddling and I'm staying above water. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the most important thing. So I'm excited for young artists. I'm excited for new artists. I speak up for the new artists. That's why I say what I say about the algorithm. That's what I say about labels and things like that and radio and streaming and give my insight because I want young artists to know what they're getting into before they get into it and lose themselves and get depressed and get heartbroken by this industry that has really brought people down. It can really destroy you if you allow it to, and I refuse to let it destroy me.
I think that your transparency is going to help so many more artists than you even know.
Aw, yay.
And my last question for you is there anything about that you haven't been asked or that you haven't said that you would like to put on the record?
Well,
Or how would you like it to be remembered? Like in 15 years, what do you want people to look at as?
I have a vision that this album is going to be so heavily consumed in like 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think people, I always say like, when I put out My Face Hurts From Smiling, I'm like, I love this mixtape. I can't wait until it's number one next year because people love to go back and we always appreciate things after they've already happened and you can't have it. And they're like, is it too, like, Shut the Fuck Up featuring Lil Jon. They're like, has enough time passed to admit that this song actually, this is actually good. I'm like, girl, you could have did that when it dropped.
It's about damn time, some might say.
So I think I want people to look back on Bitch and be like, wow, like she really like shook it up. She really changed the conversation. And like her path was going this way and she didn't allow them to take her down. Like she kept pushing forward. And this is my disruptor third album. This I have to disrupt on the third album. I guess it's all pop stars do it. It's like the sophomore slump. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't have a sophomore slump.
I was going to say, I don't think you experienced that.
But the third album got to go off the beaten path. And this is mine. And like I said, I'm building a legacy. I'm already 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 albums in the future. So for me, this is just a stepping stone in the right direction. I had to course correct my destiny and my career because people were trying to veer it off my path. Mm-hmm. And I will never let that happen.
I love that. What an incredible answer. Lizzo, thank you so much for coming. I was so happy to have you.
I love talking to you.
I'm so glad. I wanted to ask you questions that I feel like people aren't asking you.
I definitely was expecting a read today. I really was.
Oh, really?
I was like, I thought you were going to read me to Filthiana.
And you showed up anyway.
And I showed up anyways. You know who I think needs to come on here?
Who? Has been very upset with me because I...
That's why I think he should come.